Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, today our guest is Tommy Williams. He is the past president and current chairman of the board of the National Auctioneers Association. He's been in the business of auctions since 1963 and co-founded Williams & Williams Auction Company with his son, Dean. Tommy, welcome back.
Thank you, Bruce. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
I know that your company, Williams & Williams, also auctions other than real estate. So I was just curious, if I heard you auction off cattle, for instance, would I understand a word of it? Is there a chance that's different for cattle than there is real estate?
Well, certainly, yes. The simple answer is yes. I would still hope you would understand it. It all has to do with what we call the pace of the auction.
Okay.
And when you're selling real estate, you realize that very many of your buyers maybe have never been to an auction before, so it's paramount that you're very, very clear, very easy to understand, and there isn't anything that in any way generates fear to the buyer. If it does, then you're really shooting yourself in the foot. But in a cattle auction, most cattle buyers they've been to many, many auctions, and they kind of like the fast pace of it, and so there's a certain entertainment factor, I think, that goes along with a cattle auction or an automobile auction that serves well in that particular environment.
You know what's interesting, and when I looked at some of the numbers, that the auction business, the biggest item auctioned were automobiles. Is that accurate?
Oh, yes. In fact, if I remember correctly, if you take our gross auction proceeds for the entire year of 2008, close to 50% plus, it would be in automobiles.
That's remarkable. Now, I'm just curious, are the end buyers users or are they dealers?
Both. The primary, though, are dealers.
Okay.
But yes, the way they describe automobile auctions, we literally call them dealer auctions, and a dealer auction means that the only people that can buy are dealers.
Okay.
And then you have what we call open to the public. And then the open to the public, or just as you would expect, you would go to that auction and anybody can go and buy whatever vehicle they would like.
Okay. July 13th through the 18th in Overland Park, Kansas, the 60-year reunion of the National Association or Auction Association is going to happen. Who shows up to that and what's done over that five-day period?
Well, that is the annual meeting of the National Auctioneers Association. And you have somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 auctioneers that will attend that, and usually they bring their family. The auction business is very much a family-oriented business, and we have many activities at that conference and show that are family-based. But during that time, of course, the annual meeting takes place, and there's business that goes on with the annual meeting. But primarily, that is the best and main time of the year for auctioneers together from all over the country to attend the different educational seminars. And off the top of my head, I think we will offer like 60 different educational seminars at that conference.
Okay. You became involved in the auction business about 46 years ago. Was there a family history of being involved in auctions prior to you?
Not really. It so happens that my grandfather on my mother's side was an auctioneer, but he passed away when I was a little boy. And my father was an auctioneer, but I didn't really know my father until I was an adult. I actually became an auctioneer and started in the auction business completely and totally on my own. I was fascinated with it as a little boy. I was going to auctions with my mother and my grandmother, and then I became quite enchanted with it and really decided to become an auctioneer when I was 11. So it was something I pursued, but if you go check my family history, sure enough, there were several auctioneers in my background.
Okay. Now, your son, Dean, was he Was he basically, did he have any choice in the matter? Was he going to be an auctioneer, or did he love it as much as you did?
No. In fact, many people don't realize this. Dean is an attorney.
Okay.
In fact, Dean, of course, he, like most children, I think when they are involved with their father's business, and I have two sons, and they helped, the entire family was involved with the auction business every day of their life as they grew up. So they were very anxious to get away from it. And Dean was in law school and really had, I think, almost zero inclination to be involved in the auction industry. And at that time, I moved my business from West Central Illinois to Tulsa. That was in 1985. And Dean came out to visit me. He, as I say, was attending law school, was fascinated with the potential of the auction industry in Tulsa, and said, "Hey, Dad, you want a partner?" And the rest of it is history, as they say.
Now, you've got six grandkids. Any auctioneers in the future?
I kind of think we do. I you never know. The older ones, the two oldest ones are girls, and they're one of them, or they're both married and now starting families. I don't see them involved in the auction business. But my youngest grandson, he seems to be kind of intrigued with it. So I certainly hold out a lot of hope that maybe he'll be the next generation of auctioneers.
I'm sure if he hangs around you, he's going to get the bug.
I hope so.
The model that Williams & Williams has chosen is different than some of the other auction companies. First of all, what do you think of the online auction, that's all it's going to do. It's going to be online, auctioning real estate. How do you think that's going to fare?
I think online auctions, whether we talk real estate or any product, are a very viable way of selling at auction. I think there's a very bright future for online auctions, and we do sell a certain segment of our real estate product in online-only auctions. But we have statistics that prove to us that it's really not debatable as far as we're concerned, that if you stand on the front yard of the home that you're going to sell, it will bring 10% plus more than whether you sell it online, in a ballroom, or any other way. And I think people that have tried all of the different ways of selling the product, I think they would find it would be very difficult to argue with what I just said. And so, obviously, if it's 10% more, that's a pretty significant difference, and it's pretty hard to walk away from that 10%.
Well, what it is more costly and time-consuming for the auctioneer. There's no doubt about that.
Now, for us to deliver that 10% more to the seller is, without question, much more expensive for us.
Absolutely. Is your preference seller reserve or absolute? Maybe we should define those terms.
Well, an absolute auction, it means that it is going to sell to the highest and best bidder that day, period. That means without reserve. There won't be anybody bidding on behalf of the seller. It's a very fair, transparent, open auction where the marketplace says, this is what we're going to give, and that is it. That's an absolute auction. Without question, Bruce, done correctly, absolute auctions, there's nothing that would really be as good as that. That's because that's the auction in its purest form. It motivates the buyer to the very ultimate level of bidding. It motivates the buyer also from an attendance standpoint.
Absolutely. That's what I was wondering.
And so that's a critical thing. We all know that if the key to any auction is what can I do to create participation.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have an absolute auction and six buyers are going to show up and bid competitively, and if I had a reserved auction and only four were, well, you can see easily we've increased the pool by a third right then.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no question. That's not something that's argumentative. It's just that, unfortunately, some sellers just cannot deal with the fact that they're going to let the marketplace buy it, period. It's funny that, you know, in cars or in cows or in many, many items, and things that cost a lot of money, like bulldozers that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. The biggest auction company in the world is a company called Ritchie Brothers.
Absolutely.
And they sell equipment that's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they sell it only one way, absolute. So it can be done that way, but in the real estate business, we've let the what I call the seller dictate that they want it sold subject to reserve. It's a mistake, but it's a hard thing to overcome. And so it would be no mistake what I'm telling you. Unfortunately, our company sells most everything, what we call it, subject to confirmation.
Right.
That just means that that's what I think it should be always rather than reserve. It just means that the seller does have the option of confirming the final bid.
Let's assume that Ritchie Brothers is the world-class auctioneer of heavy equipment. Could they possibly, with all they know, mess up a real estate auction?
Yes, they would tell you that they have.
Okay.
I happen to be one of the biggest supporters of Ritchie Brothers. I know the people that at the top end of the company. It's a fabulous company. I have the utmost respect for them. But they entered the real estate auction business for a short while, and they would tell you that, yes, the real estate auction industry is very complicated. It isn't something that you can just go out in the morning and say, oh, I'm going to be a real estate auctioneer. It's a lot different than selling a bulldozer, I can assure you.
Has advertising, let's say, since the invention of and the pretty much complete acceptance of online, has the advertising world changed quite a bit for auctions, for real estate?
Oh, my gracious, Bruce. Advertising, the way we would look at advertising an auction today, even as short a time lag as 5 years ago, it's just like a completely different world. And the biggest change of all is everything to do with the Internet and that way of getting the message out. Whereas the newspaper was always your primary way of getting your message out. The newspaper was number one. The newspaper drops in value each and every day, and the Internet goes up in value each and every day.
Well, that's good because that's less expensive, I would think.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
That's right. That is a good thing. And of course, then there's more innovation comes to the Internet every day, so more and more ways of getting the message out to more and more people.
Are you able to track results so you know which advertising effort is getting the results?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, we literally track it during the what we call the marketing process. When you call our company, the very first thing they're going to ask you, they're going to say, Bruce, why did you call? And you're going to tell us why. I saw the sign. I read your ad. I saw it on the Internet. I've been to your sales. I got your postcard. And so you're going to tell us, and that's the first thing that the people in customer service are going to mark down, and we track it every day.
When the gavel falls and the auctioneer says sold, what actually just took place legally?
When you say sold, now you have to remember for that to happen, it had to be an absolute auction.
Okay, and that's correct.
Yes, so if it was an absolute auction, and the auctioneer drops the hammer and says sold, that is a, in fact, I've had very bright and astute attorneys tell me that is one of the most binding contracts you could ever enter into. The contract between you, the auctioneer, and the what we call the bidder, and he just accepts the fact that you said sold and doesn't question it, that is a very strong binding contract.
It's actually pretty unusual in the real estate world because there's a lot of people. We sell homes in California all the time, and we take deposits with no expectation of ever keeping one other than at an auction.
Yes.
If we auction a house and it doesn't close, we expect to get a piece of that deposit. But any other way, there's no way.
And of course, that's one of the, I think, not only the hallmarks of a successful auction, it's one of the hallmarks of our company. And that should be a significant deposit. I still say that the deposit should be 10% of the purchase price. We do sometimes lower that to 5%, but preferably for me, I think you need to know at the very beginning, do we have a qualified buyer? And a qualified buyer, in my opinion, has to have the ability to put down 10% of the value of the property somehow, some way.
If they have 10% of the purchase at stake, they can get pretty creative on how they have to close it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then that's critical. They must be, you know, you have to remember it done ideally. We said that it was an absolute auction.
Yes.
So if it's an absolute auction, that means that seller has committed to sell this property today to the highest and best bidder. And the auction company might have spent tens of thousands of dollars putting this sale together. And for somebody then to buy that product and not close, think of the damages that they've done to everybody, including the seller, the auction company, and the other buyers that were willing and prepared to close but didn't get to because of a buyer that was not conscientious.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. That happens on the on the purchase of a listed property, but without consequence.
Well, and of course, that's why I have some, I have to tell you, that's a problem I have with the traditional way of selling real estate. I can't understand why I, the seller, should go under contract when I am obligated to sell to you under all of these stipulations that are in your favor, and I get absolutely nothing for you taking my house off the market for maybe 30, 60, 90 days at your whim. I don't understand that concept.
In a price-declining market, it's...
In a price-declining market, it's devastating.
Yeah, it's very damaging. It really is. How is your company compensated for the auction service?
Our company has always been based on what we call commissions directly charged to the seller.
Okay.
And we still operate that way most all the time. When we sell for some lenders, some of our lenders literally require us to charge a certain buyer's premium that goes to some different service agencies that they were already affiliated with before we handle the property.
Okay.
So, but if you said, what is the pure way that Williams & Williams sells real estate, our method of charging is always compensation paid directly from the seller without add-ons.
Okay. Now, the buyer premium is certainly common in other products and has gained a lot of ground in the real estate auction business as well.
Yes, we would not be the majority. There are many more companies in the real estate auction business charging buyer premiums than that are charging it directly to the seller.
Okay.
It's just that I believe it should be on the seller's side. I think it makes for a better auction. I feel that if we all realize it's going to come off of the net that goes to the seller anyway. And I think the more positive way to do that is to charge the seller so that you, the buyer, are looking at everything in a very positive light. Nobody likes to pay a tax. I don't care what it is. We have these different, every once in a while you'll have a tax-free day in a state, and we prove that on a tax-free day it becomes the most popular day of the year to buy any product. So on a commodity as significant as a piece of real estate, I can assure you the buyer looks at that buyer's premium as a tax.
Would that maybe have a residual effect on how they feel about the auction? Just curious.
Absolutely. In my opinion, I think it has a very strong residual effect that I feel is very negative.
Okay. That makes sense. When you sell a home in Ohio for $3,000, it takes the same time and effort as a $200,000 house in California. How do you deal with these lower priced areas?
Well, we do have a minimum fee.
Okay.
And you have to, and that minimum fee is something you constantly have to work with, and it's been something that, over the history of the company, we always felt that we should handle all product. That's kind of a Tommy Williams belief that it's just as important that I sell your $5,000 house as it is that I sell your $1 million house. But unfortunately, the further we go, there comes a time when economically it's impossible for me to sell your $5,000 house. So that becomes very, very difficult. But when we are dealing with lenders where they give you 100 properties, we then have a minimum fee that we charge no matter what, and they are pretty adaptive to that.
What's interesting is the lenders have now decided not to foreclose on properties in some of these areas, where they have a damage on a property that exceeds the value. There was a story in the paper recently where the owner who had walked away from the property 2 years ago was called by the city saying, when are you going to fix up your house? And they're saying, what are you talking about? We walked away from it years ago. And no one wants it because it's got a negative value no matter what happens. So the city is ultimately going to have to take it over and probably bulldoze it.
That is a problem. You are defining an issue that I think is very serious and much more far-reaching than most people. It's not something that we see much about in the newspaper or the news media, but I see neighborhoods that due to the way we have handled these properties, in other words, 4 years ago, half of the neighborhood was vacant. And now when we go to that neighborhood, 80% of that neighborhood is vacant.
Wow.
And when that continues, and we are in situations right now in some of our particularly northeastern cities that I see entire neighborhoods that really are going to be just about as seriously as impacted as the neighborhoods were impacted in New Orleans when they were flooded.
That's,
I see them being very comparable.
where you you almost have no choice but to bulldoze them and
yes,
start over again.
Deterioration, you know, then the next thing that happens, then one of them catches fire. And, of course, then there's some fire damage to two or three of them that are close. And then they're vandalized. And, you know, it just goes on and on. And, unfortunately, I hate to make these kind of comments, but here in Oklahoma, I hope you don't have that problem in California, but we constantly hear about meth labs.
Mm-hmm.
And you find that these vacant properties are there. They are just a prime candidate for people moving in there, basically as squatters. And the next thing you know, why they start a meth lab or something else, some other illegal activity, and then you can imagine how that affects that entire neighborhood. It's devastating.
What's interesting about what you just said is that there are areas that we have in Southern California that were built after 2000 that have that problem. So you don't have to have an old area for that to occur.
Well, now, of course, that is shocking. The areas that I'm talking about are, you know, places that in the Northeast where the homes are probably 75 years old,
yeah,
and really deteriorated significantly. But when you talk about a fairly new product, then it's devastating.
Yeah, we have I've just talked to an investor who literally went up to an area and he drove through an entire street. Every house was vacant but one. And he was there for about 2 minutes and found out why the rest of the street was unoccupied, as they came and threatened him.
Oh, yes.
And
you know, our business, we run into that sometimes when we're out selling properties. We get into some very, what we would call, undesirable neighborhoods where you really don't feel comfortable even being there. But it's a situation, and we have addressed some of the issues here. The only way that we can alleviate that, we have to put people into those homes either as owners or as investors, where they will watch them and take care of them. It's once you abandon a home, I can't think of very many things that suffer more than an abandoned home.
There's going to be, I know the banking system is going to have its problem because of what's going on in Orange County right now. What will be the new RTC, basically the FDIC, has leased about 250,000 square feet in Irvine. It's going to hire about 1,000 people, and certainly to deal with a lot of the bank closures and the assets that these banks have. I was just curious if you were aware of that, and also if Williams & Williams was involved with the RTC back in the 80s.
We were just involved with RTC a little bit.
Okay.
I'm certainly very familiar with it, and we did try to get several RTC contracts, but to be very blunt, once again, dealing with government contracts, you were better off just going out in private industry and doing business, because the government hassle wasn't worth it all.
Okay.
But, yes, I'm not familiar with something like you just mentioned about FDIC opening up a shop, quite like you're talking about, but we deal with FDIC every day in our office, and, of course, we do realize that those properties will be coming from them, or some of them. If they warehouse them, and that's what I'm afraid they will do, and that's what RTC did a lot, if they actually warehouse them and they don't put them right into the marketplace and let the marketplace buy them, then we're just postponing the problem and making it worse.
That's right. At your website, there's a new term I haven't heard, auction referral cooperative. Can you tell me what you've invented there?
Well, it's something we have talked about. Dean and I have worked on this for many, many years. And it's a way to truly just establish a network of auctioneers working together. Now, it's not any kind of a franchise or any. There's no financial obligation whatsoever. It's just that if Bruce Norris is an auctioneer that has the same value system that Williams & Williams has, and you would like to work with us, we say that under some circumstances, it would probably be in our best interest to send you this home in California and let you do the auction your way. It'd be done under Bruce Norris Auction Company, no direct tie to Williams & Williams whatsoever, and then you would send us a small referral commission at the end when it closes. And then on the flip side of that, you're not required, but let's say you ran into a project that was you felt that we had a level of expertise that could help you, you would refer it back to us. But it's just a very loose referral system between auctioneers, or really what I call like-mind.
Unfortunately, Tommy, we are out of time. I'm going to mention your phone number one more time.
918 250-2012.
All right, Tommy, thank you very much. Their website is williamsauction.com.
That is right.
And it's a fantastic website and a fantastic company. Tommy, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you, Bruce. It's always a pleasure.
You betcha.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.